From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After denying it for 14 years, this week, baseball legend Pete Rose is admitting he bet on baseball and on his own team while managing the Cincinnati Reds. I looked at the games and thought, I'll take a dime on the Lakers, a dime on the Sixers, a dime on the Buckeyes, and a dime on the Reds. I didn't even consider the consequences, Rose writes in his new autobiography entitled My Prison Without Bars. Long before his new confessions, Pete Rose was banned for life from the game in 1989, but the door was left open ever so slightly to the possibility of reinstatement. No one, not even his toughest critics, has questioned the baseball genius of Pete Rose. The scrappy infielder they called Charlie Hustle is still the game's all-time batting champ. With a record 4,256 hits, he was a sure bet for Cooperstown until he gambled it away. Now Rose has come clean, sort of. He knows his best bet to get into the Hall of Fame is to be on next year's sports writer's ballot. Of the 17 baseball players who've been banned for life, none has ever been reinstated, writes Rose. But since I have 7 Major League and 12 National League records, you'll understand why I would like to add just one more first to my tally before I settle in for the big dirt nap. Tonight on Point, the truth and Pete Rose. What do you make of Pete Rose's ninth inning confession? Do you feel compassion or revulsion? What's the moral of this story? If you had a vote, would you vote Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Vero Beach, Florida, is Faye Vincent, Commissioner of Major League Baseball from 1989 to 1992. Good evening and welcome, Faye Vincent.
Good evening, sir. Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. You've written recently and eloquently on Pete Rose and the whole Pete Rose story. Faye Vincent, we will have some listeners who know this story inside out and some who don't know it well at all. Can you just give us the big pieces here? Pete Rose was a great, great, great player. He was managing the Cincinnati Reds. He started gambling, but he never confessed. Nevertheless, it's on the public record that he did. The investigation has found that he did. How did all this unfold?
Well, what unfolded is that some of his colleagues went to Sports Illustrated in 1989, and said that Pete Rose had been betting on baseball. Word came to us in the baseball office. Peter Uberoth was the commissioner, and we decided to investigate. We called Rose in. I asked him because I was in the meeting with Bart Giamatti, then
baseball commissioner.
Well, he was about to be the commissioner.
Okay,
Uberoth
right,
was the
right.
commissioner. Pete, the real question is, have you bet on baseball? And he said, absolutely not. I'm not that stupid. I bet on everything else, but I never bet on baseball. So I said, that's a very important answer because we are going to investigate. And if you're wrong, if you've been lying to us, the consequences are severe. I will tell you, nobody in the room thought he was lying. We all thought that he was right. He would have been really stupid to be betting on baseball. We couldn't believe that he was doing it, but he was.
The investigation showed that pretty clearly, and yet Pete Rose denied it flat out for all these years until this week. And in denying it, he was pretty tough on the people who leveled the charges, the accusations, including you, Faye Vincent.
Oh, he was very tough. You know, at the beginning, he sued Bart Giamatti. We went to court. He tried all sorts of maneuvers, obviously to avoid any sort of confrontation on the facts. Eventually, he came forward, or his lawyers did, and said, we'll make whatever deal you want, because they had no defense. And I wrote the agreement in which Pete was supposed to have, Pete signed the agreement. And in it, it said Peter Edward Rose neither admits or denies that he bet on Big League Baseball. Now, that or denial he completely ignored for 14 years, even though that was a pretty forceful legal document. And beyond denying it, he was very abusive about the people he dealt with. He complained that he hadn't been treated fairly. You know, I said many times, look, if I'd been accused of betting on baseball, my whole livelihood depended on it,
yeah.
I would hardly have gone out of baseball without a hell of a fight.
And yet off he went.
Because he had no defense. We had an enormous array of facts, and nobody has looked at the matter with any degree of care. Ever doubted that he bet on baseball.
And now Sports Illustrated has it again. His autobiography is coming out. They've got the excerpt. The cover says, Pete Rose's confession.
Hey, Vincent, it's seen as a fairly transparent effort to win his way back into baseball's good graces and have a shot at the Hall of Fame. What do you think? Is this the confession that's needed to clear the slate for to clean the slate for Pete Rose?
Well, he would hope that. I mean, he's consistent. Everything he does is about money. The poor guy is really pathetic. He's been broke and owes money. And 1989, he made a very bad judgment that his income was dependent on his lying. Now he's made an equally bad judgment that his future is dependent on telling part of the truth. He's not telling the whole truth. And beyond that, you know, no one's ever been readmitted to baseball because the deterrent has worked. For 80-some years, baseball's not had any gambling scandal except the Pete Rose one. And the reason the deterrent works is that everybody in baseball knows if you bet on baseball, you're out for life. And Pete is really looking for extraordinary treatment. I think he believes that he's different, that he's a great ball player, and he can do anything he wants, and people will forgive him. But this isn't about a public relations poll. This isn't about popularity. This isn't about what the fans want. This is about a pretty important principle, and I hope the commissioner stands on the principle and doesn't let him back. He doesn't deserve to be readmitted. He's done nothing to redeem himself in my book.
Faye Vincent, you write that St. Augustine set the bar pretty high for confessionals in his own work centuries ago, and that Pete Rose's fall short. He comes right out and says, I did it. I did this betting. He talks about sacks and socks full of cash being carried off by his carriers and bet here and there and being down $20,000 and $30,000 and up, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. He makes no bones about saying that he did it. He says he never bet against his own team, the Cincinnati Reds. But he says that, look, I had a problem like an alcoholic or a drug addict, but the problem was with the system. He presents himself as a kind of a victim. He says, you know, it's capital punishment. If I confessed, I was out and out forever. He says the punishment doesn't fit the crime here. He was still treated too harshly. What do you make of that, Fabian?
Well, isn't that pathetic? I mean, you almost rest your case on that statement. Here's a guy that just doesn't get it. Let me read your quote. This is from Rose's book.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm supposed to act all sorry or sad or guilty now that I've accepted that I've done something wrong. But you see, I'm just not built that way. So let's just leave it like this. I'm sorry it happened. Let's move on. I mean, that is not the contrition or the remorse that I think is required. He is really not bright enough to understand that the risk to baseball is the corruption. It almost killed baseball in the 20s. The Black Sox scandal, and Pete Rose is acting as if this is a minor thing. It's like having an extra drink or, you know, being caught up with drugs for a few weeks, and then he can just walk in and say, well, I did it. I'm really not sorry I did it because it's no big deal. And by the way, I want to get in the Hall of Fame. What's really at stake here is not the Hall of Fame. This guy wants to be back on the field managing because managers at the top, like Joe Torre, are making $5 or $6 million. Pete Rose never made $300,000 as a manager. So he is stunned at what he's given up. He miscalculated. And he is really eager to get back and start making some big money.
Faye Vincent, when you say that Pete Rose is not bright enough to understand what he's done, do you have personal animus toward this man?
No, I really don't. I mean, I just read this statement. Can you imagine a guy trying to get back into baseball and writing a confessional and writing, I guess I'm supposed to feel sorry or sad or guilty, but that's not my way. I'm just not built like that. In effect, forget that. Let's move on. That let's move on is so arrogant and out of focus with his reality that I have to conclude he's just not bright enough to see what he should do. What he should do is say, I'm really sorry. I hurt baseball. I did a lot of bad things. I want to earn my way back. I'll do a variety of things to do right for baseball. I'll talk to kids. I'll give lectures. But how could Bud Selig send him out to talk to kids with an attitude like that? It's like asking an elephant to fly. He can't do it. There's something in Pete Rose that just won't say, I did it and I'm sorry.
Faye Vincent, sit with us for just a moment here. I know we just got you for a few minutes more, but I want to welcome a couple more voices into our conversation with you. With us tonight from Port Washington, New York, is George Vesey, sports columnist for the New York Times. He's co-author of 5 o'clock Comes Early, A Ball Player's Battle with Alcoholism. Good evening and welcome, George Vesey.
Good evening. How are you?
Great, and it's great to have you. Also with us tonight is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty with the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
George Vesey, what do you make of Faye Vincent's stance on Pete Rose? Is he too tough? Is he not tough enough? How do you come down on the Pete Rose saga?
No, I don't think he's too tough at all. The only question I have is what you do with Pete Rose, whether you can separate between the ball player who hustled and got his base hits and entertained people and was pretty charming in his own obtuse way, and the manager who was betting on his team while he was managing, broke all the rules. Can you separate them? I can, personally. I could put him, we don't vote at the New York Times. We're not allowed to vote in a contest like that. But I would personally vote for him to get him in the Hall of Fame, if only because I think he was clean while he was playing. I mean, he certainly bet. Goodness knows, I'd go to Highlight once every spring. He'd be there. You'd hear stories of him doing this and that. He bet on everything. So there's no doubt that he's a degenerate gambler who has a real addiction problem and probably, could wind up with his legs chopped off some point in his life when he owes money to the wrong people. But could I put him in the Hall of Fame for his playing career? Yeah, I could.
George Vesey, remind us of what it was that made Pete Rose so spectacular, so great as a player.
I would say it was his extremely selfish will to make a base hit every time he came up. He was never distracted away from the goal of making a base hit, and he probably made more of himself than a lot of players, even in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if you could bring poor Mickey Mantle back and say, did you give it your best shot? Were you in the best position to get a hit every time up? Was your head right? Was your he probably, and a lot of other players might say, gee, there were 10% of the time when I wasn't all there for whatever reason, and we can guess with Mantle. Mm-hmm. But in Rose's case, he was fired up to make a base hit, not necessarily for the Reds, not necessarily for the fans, not necessarily for the greater good of society, but for Pete Rose. He's a very selfish player. But selfishness, if you start to look too closely at selfishness, you may have to throw an awful lot of people out of a lot of halls of fame.
And before the gambling scandal hit, how did the public perceive Pete Rose, before all this came up?
I would say he was seen as a rogue. I mean, people sort of knew almost right away what kind of guy he was. It wasn't hard to pick up that he was an arrogant, selfish, and that even when his first marriage was breaking up and on the rocks, his wife and kids didn't have a whole lot of great things to say about him. And that sort of filtered through. But I also have to say that because baseball writers like me, and I came up as a baseball writer, because we are in constant contact day by day with players, we sort of get to know the ones who are good copy. And Rose was good copy. He was cooperative. He's manipulative as only an addict can be, and probably pulled us into his little web more than we wanted. But on the other hand, he certainly was what he set out to be, a rollicking and very talented character who was right at the center of all these stories. So sure, he was part of his image was not just a sad sack gambler, which he certainly seems to be now, but also somebody who got an awful lot of hits and was in the middle of things and had opinions and points of view on lots of stuff.
He was
colorful.
He was good copy. Jack Beatty, here he is, this rogue, extremely selfish, George Vesey says, and yet he batted him out. Now he's sitting at the front door begging to be let in. Faye Vincent says, come on.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. I mean, it's sort of insulting to the whole procedure of trying to get himself right. I mean, in South Africa, they call it truth and reconciliation. When people who were guilty of crimes under apartheid, they actually had to confess their crimes to be reconciled. And he doesn't seem to have done that here. It's there's this alloy in everything he does, really, of self-destruction. Malcolm Cowley once wrote, no complete SOB ever wrote a good sentence. Well, in fact, every biography of a writer I've seen shows writers as complete SOBs. And sometimes the thing that makes them the SOB is also the thing that makes them a good writer. And it's true with this guy, too. The intensity in the play and in the life, the two things are poisonous sometimes.
And yet, Faye Vincent, George Vesey says he can see the difference between Pete Rose the gambler and Pete Rose the player, and he could put him in the Hall of Fame anyway.
Well, I love George and we're friends, but he is not focusing on the deterrent. I can see the point of a fan, but I can't see the point of a commissioner. No commissioner has had the guts to change that deterrent. Shoeless Joe Jackson is a very appealing case for rehabilitation and reinstatement.
And it's sat there for a long time. Faye Vincent, it's been great having you tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bye.
Faye Vincent, baseball commissioner from 1989 to 1992. George Vesey, Jeff Beattie, stand by. We're talking tonight about the truth and Pete Rose. You can join the conversation 1-800-423-8255. Are you swayed? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the truth in Pete Rose, as the Washington Post editorial was headlined today, about baseball and gambling and the man who's not in the Hall of Fame but sure wants to be. We're joined tonight by our own Jack Beattie and George Vesey, sports columnist for the New York Times, co-author of 5 o'clock Comes Early. You can join this conversation as well. Have you read the Pete Rose confession or pieces of it? Are you swayed? Do we have a clean slate here or a whining Hustle from Charlie Hustle? Should professional baseball reinstate Pete Rose and clear the way to the Hall of Fame? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Rose was banned from the game for life in 1989, and here's what he had to say back then.
I love the fans, not only Cincinnati, but of baseball in general. And the only thing I can tell the fans is I did not bet on baseball. I have too much respect for the game. Too much love for the game, and I appreciate how they've treated me over the years, as both as a player and as a manager.
Pete Rose making the denial in 1989. Now he's saying, yep, I did it. I bet on baseball. I bet on the Cincinnati Reds while I managed them. I never bet against my own team. George Vesey, does it matter if a manager bets for or against his team? The point's out there being made that either way it can be hurtful to the team.
Oh, absolutely. If Rose bet on his team 5 times a week and 2 days a week he didn't come in, it wasn't necessarily because he was taking his kids to the mall or to the beach. It was because he didn't think his starting pitcher was good, or, you know, whatever the reason. That's a clear sign to the people that deal with him that Pete just doesn't think his team has as good a chance that day. So no, I don't buy that argument at all. But I would like to get back to one point you raised before about reinstating him. I am not in favor of reinstating him in any way in baseball, to allow him to earn a living in baseball. I don't see it's too bad former Commissioner Vincent is off the phone, but I'd be curious as to his reaction. But I don't see any reason why they can't ban him from baseball, say you can't earn a living in this sport, but we're putting you in the Hall of Fame because of those 4,000-plus hits you made.
But I thought that ban was the roadblock to the Hall of Fame. I thought that technically he's got to be reinstated before he can be properly considered for Cooperstown.
I think it's a technicality. They can keep him from working in the sport if they want to.
So you'd make a kind of a slide around the edge here. And what about Faye Vincent's concern? He says, look, this is a deterrent. This has stood here monolithically, unshaken for all these decades, because we just can't have gambling in this game. It would destroy baseball. If we make an exception of any kind for Pete Rose, you know, it opens that crack of light.
Well, again, I'm sure I don't believe a word Rose says. And because I know he was known as a gambler in the 60s when he and I were both very young in this business, I wouldn't believe him if he said he never bet on baseball in the 60s or 70s or 80s in his very long career as a player. But unless there's real solid evidence, and the evidence seems to be from the point when he took over managing the Reds, and he was a player manager for a year or two in there when it seems to me he was placing bets. But if there's no sense that he ever did anything to hurt his team, or that his gambling was only at the end of his career, I can see separating it, and this may be some kind of Machiavellian division, or I'm sure that Commissioner Vincent would have a biblical
right.
Old or New Testament explanation for it. But I think there's a way to divide it. I think there's probably some Jesuitical way of dividing the two things and saying, yeah, you know, put him in the Hall of Fame, but we don't want him around our people. We don't want him working with kids. We don't want him in uniform. Keep him away from baseball.
Let's check in and see if there's a drumbeat out there that might just happen. We're joined now from Darnestown, Maryland, by Tim Kirchen. He covers baseball for ESPN TV and ESPN the magazine. He's a regular contributor to NPR's Only a Game. Good evening and welcome, Tim Kirchen.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for being with us. Is there a deal in the works? Can you see it? Does Bud Selig want to be the one standing under all the lights, his arm around Pete Rose, paving the yellow brick road for him to Cooperstown in the Hall of Fame? Is it out there, Tim Kirchner?
I think it's still out there, but I think the chances are more remote today than they were, say, a year ago. About 14 months ago, Pete met with Bud Selig, and they had a pretty good meeting, and Pete told him, all right, I bet on baseball, I'm willing to come clean, and Bud has been considering it ever since. However, this latest, you know, news and the admission that Pete bet on baseball, said it publicly and didn't say it with great contrition, and with the book coming out at the time, especially during Hall of Fame week like this, I really believe that the more Pete says, the more trouble he's going to get himself in. He was relatively quiet for over a year. I know Major League Baseball officials were happy with his conduct, but it's possible they're not quite as happy with him these days as they were, say, 6 months ago.
So how do you read this? Is Pete Rose really out for the Hall of Fame, or is he just out to make some dollars on a new autobiography?
Well, that's a good question. You never know with Pete. But what I think Pete's out for, in fact, I think number one on his list is to manage again. And I just don't think that is ever going to happen, that he will manage a team. If Bud Selig reinstates him, and now I believe that is 50-50 at best at this point, whereas I thought it was 80-20 not too long ago, I think Bud has the right and the power to say, I will approve any job that you get in Major League Baseball, but I'm never going to let you manage again. It's possible Bud will set it up that way with the agreement. And it's also possible Pete will say, well, I don't want your agreement if you're not going to let me manage again, because I think that's what he wants to do first and foremost.
Boy, George Vesey, can you imagine any owner picking up Pete Rose as his manager, the guy who bet on the Reds?
Oh, sure. I can imagine lots of owners wanting to. Owners aren't necessarily the most ethical people in the world either. I mean, I heard of an owner who took a loan from another owner while he was commissioner. That's a hearsay story, of course. We're not really sure.
So the owners would have no compunction for all this stuff hanging on Pete Rose.
Well, I mean, you know, they've all got their own ethical stances, and
so to speak.
And they ethical or unethical, and I'm sure that, you know, to make money, if somebody wasn't making money, if their ball team wasn't selling out, if they were having a bad time, if they were in a losing streak, they'd push the button and say, let's bring in Pete. Who's to say?
Wow,
you know, I've seen strange things and strange, you know, broadcasters and referees becoming basketball coaches. I mean, there's no rule that says some owner wouldn't do it.
It's a wild world out there. George, Tim Kirchen, Jack Beattie, stand by. A lot of callers want to join us. I want to invite them in. Steve is calling from Orleans, Massachusetts. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Doesn't baseball risk really becoming more hypocritical? By forgiving certain players of huge misdeeds and drug abuse and things, and
who are you thinking of? Who are you thinking of there, Steve?
Maybe Daryl Strawberry,
just for example.
Certainly not the poster boy for good behavior.
So you're saying if they can forgive Daryl Strawberry, why not Pete Rose?
Well, I personally don't think he ought to be put in, but when Faye Vincent stands up and makes a compelling argument why he shouldn't, you got to stop and look at baseball and say, well, you know, geez. It's sort of like the University of Indiana. They loved Bobby Knight, and he was allowed to hit people until he started losing.
Sort of like that. Steve, let me put it to Tim Kirchen. Tim, is baseball so riddled with hypocrisy, as our caller would say, that this one just doesn't stand up? You can't stand it alone?
Well, I think there's a big difference between gambling on baseball and, say, doing something drug-related. Now, granted, they're both terrible things. Don't get me wrong on this. But when you do drugs, sometimes you only really hurt yourself. But when you gamble on baseball, I think you possibly could be affecting a lot more people. I have a scout friend of mine who is in his 80s, and he told me that if Pete Rose had killed a man, it would be less of an infraction than what Pete Rose did. I said, you've got to be kidding me. That's preposterous. He said, Tim, you were not around for the aftermath of the Black Sox scandal. The game was nearly ruined because people in the game were betting on the game, and the game almost died. And that's why it's the most unforgivable sin in baseball is having any sort of gambling involved with the people involved in it.
And yet you can hear there remains that affection out there still in corners for Pete Rose. I'm joined right now from Los Angeles by somebody who knows a lot about that, Jim Gray, sports reporter for ESPN and ABC TV. He covers boxing for Showtime. Good evening and welcome, Jim Gray.
Hi, how are you this evening?
We're great. Jim, tell us the story of what happened to you in 1999. You put a question, Game 2 of the World Series between the Yankees and the Braves. I guess you were in Atlanta. They have baseball's all-century team there. Just before Game 2, you put a question to Pete Rose. You asked him on air, Pete, you said, are you willing to admit that you bet on baseball and make some sort of apology? And what response did you get from the public for posing that question, Jim Gray?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people out there who felt that it was offensive to ask Pete that question. Pete obviously has a lot of accomplishments throughout his major league career, the all-time hit king and so forth. And I guess that not all quarters, but a lot of people felt that that Pete was now back on the field. And in their mind, you know, he had been restored to a place where he belonged. So they didn't want to hear about gambling, I guess, or as what happens in a lot of things in our country. If a man can box, if a man can catch a football or hit a baseball, or if a politician is popular, they want to overlook some of their flaws, and even if they're major, even if they're things that as I was listening to Tim talk about, you know, catastrophic mistakes in terms of the sport, they're willing to overlook it because of this blind faith and this blind love that they have, that they attach to their childhood and adult heroes.
And those fans, those supporters came down on you like a ton of bricks.
Well,
I mean, there were websites.
There is a very, very large silent majority. We did hear a lot from those who were unhappy. Those who were not unhappy tended to either contact me privately or come up to me in an airport. But those who engage in talk radio, those who were involved with the Internet, a lot of people in newspapers and letters to the editor and calling into the switchboard and so forth, yes, there was a lot of venom and some anger.
George Vesey, how do you read that vestigial and not insignificant support for Rose?
Well, I'm not surprised. I think everybody loves their sports heroes. I mean, I started out as a young writer, and if you would suggest that Mickey Mantle sometimes could be grumpy or maybe not even ready to play on a certain day, people would tell you, oh, no, not the Mick, a syndrome I'm sure Jim Gray can relate to.
Yeah.
People just don't want to hear that stuff. Now we're a little bit more, and even young fans are a little bit more seasoned to the foibles of their heroes, and Daryl Strawberry just being one example.
Yep. Let's get some more calls here. Scott's calling from Franklin, Massachusetts. Hi, Scott, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, Pete Rose doesn't, in any of the excerpts and certainly of the book and any of the interviews that I've heard, Pete Rose makes no medical excuse. No, I was an addicted gambler and I couldn't help myself.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know about that. He comes pretty darn close to that. He says, if I had been an alcoholic or a drug addict, baseball would have suspended me for 6 weeks and paid for my rehabilitation. The distinction between drugs, booze, and gambling told me that baseball was interested in punishment, not treatment. He sounds like he's calling himself a gambling addict.
Yeah, but it's not. There is a. I happen to know from, I'll say, family experience, that there is a substantial difference between what Pete Rose says in that context and coming clean on the notion that coming out and saying I'm an addicted gambler and I have a problem and that's what propelled me to do this. So
well,
if he's
don't you see that that's the problem with his entire makeup, with the entire chemistry of his being, that this is what he is, and this is how he can, you know, this man can justify anything. This man has, when you just take a look at the needlessness of all of this on his end and how he could have avoided all of this had he just come forward earlier, gotten some help. He said he didn't know where to get help. We're a country that reaches out with open arms to anyone who has a problem in all walks of life. But he decided to go on a path where, look at what John Dowd has been through, the abuse that this man has had to take.
The lawyer who tracked it all down.
Commissioner Vincent, Bart Giamani and his family, all the investigators. I mean, come on. All along, he knew he was lying. So, you know, this is his makeup.
So, Scott, what do you want to see from Pete Rose?
Well, but where I take this is, if he's not going to do as we all suggest he ought to do, then and come clean on the subject and come clean with a medical excuse, there can be no doubt that Pete Rose knew at all times what he was doing and the damage it was going to cause and that he was violating the rule. And for that, he should never come back to baseball.
Scott, we've got it. Thanks for your call. Jack Beatty, here's this incredible picture. I mean, we heard earlier from Faye Vincent how Pete Rose sat there with Faye Vincent and Peter Ueberroth. They said, they asked him straight out, did you bet on baseball? He said, I'm not that stupid. Now he says, he asks himself in his memoir, why didn't I tell him the truth? And he said, well, because they had no hard evidence. In other words, they couldn't prove it, so why should I tell them?
Oh, yes, it's all cash. And, of course, he's getting a bundle for this book. And he's operating, as many people have pointed out, in a peculiar window here. He's only got a bit longer while for the writers to make this decision, as opposed to the Veterans Committee of players. And he figures he's got a much better shot with the writers. And so he's giving this sort of partial, he's sort of lifting his, he's giving us a little ankle, you might see. He hasn't reached the knee, much less the thigh.
But what's the human story at the heart of this, Jack? I mean, this flawed guy, yet the people still feel some magnetism in him. He is animal magnetism, I guess. There's a moral drama being played out here, but it doesn't end up with a really edifying ending.
Well, you know, the intensity that was in his play, I mean, it reminds me, George will know this player better than me, he reminds me a lot of Billy Martin, who had a lot of trouble off the field as a player, too. But he played the game in the same headlong, pell-mell, everything in it way. And that sort of totalism you just can't find anything in life that's going to match up to that. He says himself, he said, if I couldn't get the high from playing baseball, then I needed a substitute to keep from feeling depressed. I was driven in gambling as well as in baseball. Enough was never enough. And he played that way, but it was very hard. It's very hard to socialize that. And then the other thing is, fans come along with this. They reinforce the player's narcissism. You know, all this, players can do no wrong, players can do. And there's a kind of pathology that goes on there where these guys are cut slack, the parking tickets, you name it. And they're heroes. Well, they're heroes for doing things that don't involve necessarily moral qualities at all.
Whatsoever. Jim Gray, I know we've just got you for another minute. Where do you finally come down on this? Is there any room for Pete Rose here, anytime, ever, anyhow, after this confession?
Any room in terms of getting back into baseball?
Back in baseball, Hall of Fame?
Well, I don't think he should ever be permitted in any type of a position in baseball. As for the Hall of Fame, you know, we don't live in the Soviet Union. We just don't abolish a man's records and his being. Having said that, there must be some repercussions. There must be some consequence for action. There must be some way other than some trickling out of a slight admission of something that everybody with any sense has known for years. This can't be the way to get him in. And I think to a large degree, many of the people who had believed in Pete were holding out the iota of hope that he was telling the truth, that maybe somehow, some way, against this overwhelming evidence, against this mountain, against this stack of information that John Dowd compiled, mm-hmm. that it was wrong somehow, some way. And now I think a lot of those people, not all of them, and he's still going to have fans, a lot of those people are disappointed because no one likes to be lied to in any way, shape, or form. We can take a lot of things in our lives, but very few of us can take somebody just standing up time after time after time and just bald-faced lying into your eyes. So. I think he's maybe by doing this, even though he says this would end it all, as he's been advised, I think he's compounded it.
May have just compounded it. Jim Gray, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Jim Gray, sports reporter for ESPN and ABC TV, covers boxing for Showtime. We're talking tonight about the truth, and Pete Rose, George Vesey is with us, Tim Kirchen, and our own Jack Beatty. You can join us. What's the bottom line, moral question here? Is this high moral drama or just low sleaze? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the truth in Pete Rose, about baseball and gambling, and the man who's not in the Hall of Fame but sure wants to be. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you feel compassion for this old warhorse or revulsion? What about Pete Rose's argument that he's a victim like an alcoholic or a drug addict? Would you vote Pete Rose into the Baseball Hall of Fame? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from New York, from Port Washington, New York, by George Vesey, sports columnist for the New York Times. From Darnestown, Maryland, by Tim Kirchen, covers baseball for ESPN, and by our own Jack Beatty. Glenn is calling right now from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I believe this is a point of honor. I think this fellow has been dishonorable. And to just give a simple example, having watched the Red Sox play the Evil Empire.
That would be the Yankees.
And seeing with my two nieces and nephew, and seeing their reaction when Pedro threw the pitch that caused Zimmer to rush out and the whole fracas, mm-hmm. They were concerned about who was right and what was wrong in that. And I was, you know, happy to see that kids these days are still concerned about what's honorable and what's good.
So you want a role model once again in the athlete, and you don't see it in Pete Rose?
Absolutely not. I think this fellow is just out for himself, and, you know, he should go to one of the networks and get his own reality TV show.
Is there any confession, however heartfelt, that would turn you around, Glenna?
Absolutely. Everything these days, I think, is about honor and role models for everyone. And I'm not a religious person, but maybe about the Red Sox. But
Glenna, we've got it. And thanks very much for your call. Jack, I was struck in the excerpt in Sports Illustrated. There's this story of Pete Rose in his boyhood going to the track, the horse track, with his dad and with Don Zimmer and Don's dad, and everybody, you know, laying down their bets on the horses. Here, years later, we've got Don Zimmer, well, making his own kind of history this year, and Pete Rose still on the outside. Bill's calling from Warren, Pennsylvania. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening. When I was a young fella, I remember laying in bed at night listening to Major League Baseball on my little transistor radio.
Mm.
Back then, baseball players were people you could look up to. I remember the days of Roberto Clemente, Willie Stargell. The guys like Pete Rose, who were basically in it, he was a good ball player, don't get me wrong.
Mm.
4,000 hits is not anything to be snagged at
over
a career. But basically, at least from where I look at it, it was all about money. When he got himself in trouble, it almost seemed like the focus of the whole game changed from love of the game to how much money can I make out of it. And it's wrong. The game is supposed to be about the game. It's not supposed to be about how much money people can make. People, ball players driving fancy cars, can't take time to even sign an autograph book for a kid.
And the cars are fancy and the numbers are big. Bill, let us pick it up. George Vesey, what about this idea of the good old days in baseball when it was a lot better? Of course, Shoeless Joe Jackson's way back there in history. Was there a golden age? Is Pete Rose part of some, I don't know, thin edge of the early wedge of the corruption of baseball? How do you see it?
If there was a golden age, I missed it. Talk about a driven player. Ty Cobb once punched out a roommate when they used to room two to a room because the roommate had gotten into the shower first. And Cobb just decked him and said, "Don't you understand, I've always got to go first."
Ty Cobb, the man that Pete Rose supplanted as all-time hit king.
Well, absolutely. And their personalities are not that far apart. And in fact, there are rumors that Ty Cobb and Tris Speaker were involved in some betting coups back in the early 20th century when it was still illegal to bet. You certainly couldn't bet on your own team or against it, and they were doing all kinds of things, possibly to throw games. So it's always been there. There are a lot of people in the Hall of Fame that are not admirable people in one way or another. The difference is that the laws were more in place after the 1999 scandal, which Commissioner Vincent makes mm-hmm. a good point about, mm-hmm. and that Rose is a gambler. He's not a drug addict or a drinker, but he is an addict. If he had gone to some kind of treatment center right away, and I remember talking to Giamatti and Vincent about this at the time he was suspended,
yeah.
and they were both pretty adamant that the man really has got to do something extraordinary, but that he still gambled, which was different from anything else. I mean, Vincent's not wrong. He's not making that up. That is a very different sin in the baseball mm. rules.
Tim Kirchner, the details coming out here in Pete Rose's confession, such as it is, are arresting, though. I mean, here he's talking about, you know, bags full and socks full of cash being thrown in the back of pickup trucks at gas stations, the drop-off point for his runners for these tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, he was really in it up to his hips.
Well, he sure was. In fact, I talked to one of his former teammates today who felt the need to call me and tell me this story that one of his teammates was giving him trouble on the bus one night about his haircut. Pete always had a bad haircut. And Pete took out a roll of bills from his pocket, and the first bill on it is $1,000. And they count up the money because he throws the roll of bill at a teammate, and it's $25,000 that he's carrying in his pocket.
The man's ready to roll.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if this is true, it probably is. I don't know if it happened all the time, but when you talk to people who are gamblers, they'll tell you those are the guys who carry $25,000 around in their pocket.
Well, when you read Pete Rose today, he comes across right in that category. A lot of cash being pumped every week, and not just locally, but off to Florida, New York, and wherever he had his bagman who could get it in the flow for him. Cherie is calling from Barberville, Kentucky. Hi, Cherie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
First, let me say how much I do enjoy the program.
Oh, thanks so much, Cherie.
I'm from a dysfunctional family, and there are a lot of us out there who are from dysfunctional families, and I think one of the things that Pete Rose is doing is he is not a remorseful addict.
And are you speaking to then whether he should stand in the Hall of Fame or just about
no,
him as a man, as a human being?
As a human being, as a man, as a baseball player, no, I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, if there's already talk about his gambling as a player, you know, then no, he shouldn't be there. And
but
then,
when you look at it that way, Cherie, you're taking us almost right past the Hall of Fame to Pete Rose's own soul here. I mean, are you saying he's got to get remorseful to get
I do believe it. And when you're from a dysfunctional family, you know when the addict is being remorseful, is telling you the truth, and really is sorry for his actions. And Pete Rose has not portrayed any of that thus far.
And you just don't see it here. Cherie, thanks for the front row seat call there. Jack, you've thumbed through this. You've read what he's got to say. Are we being too hard on him? There is a kind of cavalier quality even in the confession.
There is, and it's disingenuous. I mean, as many people have pointed out, he says, I didn't bet against my own team. Well, of course, you know, if he decides to put a relief pitcher in this game because he's bet on it, and
not against his team, but on it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. He's bet on for his team, and is taking the guy out of an even more important game for the weekend. I mean, in other words, it's just as bad, and he doesn't, you know, what's the line? He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what this scandal with the Black Sox scandal did to baseball. He doesn't understand the basketball scandals of the 50s and how something basic was fractured there, and that he was playing with this primal fire and sinning against the whole structure of the thing. And he doesn't, there's no comprehension of that at all. Well, you know, guys, he says, drink and take drugs and, you know, my punishment exceeds the crime. But he doesn't understand the crime was against the game itself.
Yeah. Tim Kirchner, how do you see this playing out? What's your guess?
Well, I've had to change my mind in the last 2 days because I've seen public opinion sway right before my eyes. I thought the reason that Bud Selig was willing to reinstate him is because this is what the public said they wanted to happen.
Give us the confession.
And Bud said, all right, this is what the fans want, fine. Yesterday, my brother, who's the fairest guy in the whole world, called me and said, I don't like Pete Rose anymore. I've seen a different side of him that I don't like. And I'm afraid, for Pete's sake, that a lot of people have gone to that edge. And now Bud Selig is looking at this and saying, is this what the people really want now? I think that was Pete's only chance, is that Bud had a chance to get rid of this annoying thing on the side that is getting in the way of the game of baseball, is Pete Rose. It's a PR coup to bring him back. Now I'm not sure it's such a great PR move to bring him back.
And George Vesey, what's the human lesson here? We've just got a minute left. What do you boil it down to?
Oh, the human lesson is that Pete hasn't learned all the people that tried to tell him about addiction and to get him into some kind of program. He would have none of it, and he's paying the price 14 years later. He's just too arrogant. He's a hard one to crack, and it may cost him any kind of income in baseball, and certainly it's costing him respect, and I totally agree with Tim. My email is running like 7-1 against Pete. People are just saying, I can't stand the guy now that I know more about him. So, and if Bud Selig really is flowing in the wind on this, he certainly has the evidence or the information to be tough on Rose.
May never make it through the portals of those big doors in Cooperstown. George Vesey, thanks so much for being with us
My
tonight.
My pleasure.
George Vesey, sports columnist for the New York Times. And Tim Kirchen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tim Kirchen covers baseball for ESPN. Jack, great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, an apology from another embattled public figure, Connecticut Governor John Rowland. This is On Point. With a new poll out showing that the majority of his constituents think he should resign, and with his legislature considering impeachment, Connecticut Governor John Rowland took to the airwaves tonight to ask for forgiveness. Rowland has admitted to lying about accepting questionable gifts from employees and state contractors to spruce up his summer cottage. In a remarkable 5-minute speech broadcast across Connecticut, the embattled governor acknowledged his mistakes and pledged to redeem himself and not resign. Here is an excerpt from Governor Rowland's address.
When we make mistakes in life, we tend to think of those mistakes in very personal terms. But when you live a public life, the ramifications of your actions are far greater. They affect the people that you work with. They affect the people that have supported you. But most importantly, they affect the people of the state, you and your families, you who have put your trust in me. That's what's most tragic. I've hurt and angered people that I've spent my entire adult life trying to serve. Though I'm proud of the accomplishments of my administration, I'm well aware that my failings have cast a long shadow. I was wrong when I accepted gifts given to me by state employees and from friends who do business with the state. For this, I accept full responsibility. But worse, I was wrong in failing to truthfully address these issues. I lied, and there are no excuses. My mistakes are my own, and I offer my sincerest apologies to the people of Connecticut, to my own family, to the people that I work with, and to our legislators and other public officials whom I share a very important public duty with. These lessons are very profound. I fully recognize that my problems are not caused by the media or by my political opponents. They are a result of my own doing. They are self-inflicted, and unfortunately, I have compounded them. I'm also facing the hard reality that my actions strayed from my own values and my own beliefs and my approach to 20 years in public service. To sort through this aspect of my problems has been particularly painful. And to see the relationships in my life, both the personal relationships and the professional relationships, to be under such strain hurts me greatly. And to know that I have disappointed my own family and my own children means that I have disappointed your family and your children as well. One of the first lessons you teach your children as parents is to never tell a lie. In all of this, nothing weighs heavier on my heart than my failure to speak truthfully about these issues. I should know better, and I do know better. But I want you all to know that I have never, not once, provided any favors or taken any actions in exchange for the gifts that I have received. Still, as I face my problems, I ask no one to defend my actions. I ask no one for sympathy. Tonight, I ask for your forgiveness, perhaps your understanding, and even your patience. Those of you who know me, you know my true character. Tonight, I humbly ask for a renewed opportunity to earn back your trust, to redeem myself in your eyes, and to continue to lead the state.
Embattled Connecticut Governor John Rowland delivering an apology broadcast statewide earlier this evening. Rowland faces the possibility of impeachment following his admission that he lied about accepting illicit gifts from employees and state contractors. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.